each other. Our friends I once didn't know. No, I ain't got my childhood. Our friends I once didn't know. But I still got my voice left. I can take it anywhere I go. Hey, hey, so I guess I'm doing fine.
Hello, and welcome to a special episode of FW Presents, the anthology show for the Fire & Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and joining me is my pal, Tom Panarese. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how are you doing?
I am doing great. Now, we are here for kind of a very, they're all very special. Every podcast we do on the Fire & Water Podcast Network is special, but this one's even more special, if that's even a thing. Previously, my pal Gene Hendricks and I have done two episodes of a thing we called Geek Fitness, and it was the inspiration for the Fire & Water Geek Fitness group that we have over on Facebook, which was an effort to talk about getting into better physical shape, addressing your physical health, that kind of stuff. And it's been an ongoing thing where we all support each other about how, you know, diet and exercise and fitness and all these kinds of things, because of course most people consider, I think, being a geek and reading comic books and this kind of stuff is sort of antithetical to being fit. And that is not necessarily the case, of course. So Gene and I wanted kind of to address that. And we've had a good time checking in on each other every so often and talking about our goals and whatever. And, of course, the Fire & Water Fitness Group is an ongoing thing where we do every day. There's a thriving group of people that we are, you know, supporting one another about what we're doing in terms of our physical health. But we're here for a slightly different reason. And then for this episode, Tom and I are here to talk about mental fitness, mental health.
Because,
of course, being mentally healthy or emotionally healthy is just as important, if not more so, than being physically healthy. And it's a topic that most people don't necessarily want to discuss, especially men, because we're tough and we don't talk about these things. But this was something that Tom and I talked about doing a long time ago, and we thought would work as part of the sort of geek fitness sort of umbrella, because it's all of a piece, you know, of course. So before we get into kind of the topic that Tom and I had spec'd out, Tom, I want to ask you, like, what inspired you to kind of want to talk about this at all?
I'm trying to think about, like, what the timeline on it was, because you and Gene did, I think you've done like two of these episodes,
right?
And and I'm in the group for that. I'm the one who's, you know, supposed to be working out, yet is sitting on his ass on the couch and watching all of you post about like how well you're doing. And my fitness pal weight tracker is like a EKG. It goes up and down, up and down, up and down. And like I've gained and lost the same 10 pounds over the course of the last decade. But that aside, it's something that just personally that I've been paying a lot more attention to over the course of the last couple of years. And I hate to get too political, but it really did start with a couple of years ago, in around like 2016, 2017, when I was going through a very rough year at work. It was like people who don't know me, I teach high school English. And it was my last year at my former school, and that was a year that was – I had some really, really rough classes. I live in Charlottesville, Virginia, so this is prior to what happened in the summer of 2017. But I live in Charlottesville, Virginia. I was teaching in a district north of there, whereas Charlottesville itself is a very blue city, so to speak, politically speaking. It's very, very liberal. The surrounding area is not. It's actually the polar opposite. It's almost – there was a running joke for a while that Charlottesville can be like an island of blue in a sea of red. And
that happens a lot in this country. There's a lot of states where you could say that.
Yeah. So I'm keeping a lot of my opinions to myself. And then we have the 2016 election. And it was just rough all around. And I was coming home from work like visibly angry some days. And over the course of that year, when I finally got out of there, I'm now teaching at the school where actually my son will be going in a few years. So, and I'm a lot happier just in terms of work, but I was still feeling very burnt out. So I looked into and this is something that when we talk about resources, you could look into if you have a job that has health insurance, you might have what's called an employee assistance program or an EAP that helps connect you with people who for things like mental health, therapists or resources or something like that. And I was feeling very, very burned out. So I actually started going to see a therapist about mostly work burnout. And then it kind of, you know, got into that. And because I couldn't understand, I honestly couldn't understand like why, when my situation had changed and everything gotten a lot better while I was still exhausted. So I started paying a lot more attention to, you know, mental health. And as that kind of went on, you kind of scrape away at the layers of things and you start to uncover things, et cetera, et cetera. And as you guys were talking about fitness and geek fitness and working out and the amount of weight that you and Gene have lost, but also, and I really appreciated this about those two episodes, also identified it as more of this. And I hate this word because the word has been overused on shows like The Bachelor, but this journey, I'm so tired of hearing the word journey, not the band, but just the, you know, oh, this journey, like, yes, you know, you hand me the rose, but you guys do talk about how, like, you know, it's this ongoing thing.
Yes.
You know, you're going to gain, you're going to lose, yep. You're going to gain, yep. You're going to lose, you're going to fall out of shape, you're going to get back into shape, you're going to commit, you're going to fall off. And that's what this, and I was like, you know what, this would be a good topic for conversation because, you know, we've all come to know each other really, really well in this community that we have. And there, like you said in your intro, there are a lot of us are men. You know, there are some women in the group, which is awesome, but there are a lot of men and men just in general have a hard time approaching these things. Whether it be sort of the toughness and not wanting to be perceived as some sort of, you know, wuss or anything like that, or whatever, or a lot of us aren't really sure what to do, you know, and how to identify these things. Cause it's not like, When you're dealing with something like anxiety or depression or something along those lines, or just too much stress, you know, it's not like getting physically sick. I mean, there are physical symptoms sometimes, but it's not like getting the flu, you know,
mm-hmm.
Or it's not like getting, you know, all of a sudden something swells up, you know, like maybe I broke my wrist or something because my wrist is like three times the size of my other wrist or something. Like, it's not something like, you know, you go to a doctor, the doctor gives you medication, you know, or whatever, that you, because you had a physical pain. It is something that's a lot deeper, and it's hard when you're not trained to understand that pain. It's hard to decipher what exactly is going on, and very often you don't know where to go for it. And very often, especially because, you know, this is very stereotypical, but, you know, you're a guy and you don't want to talk about your feelings and stuff, you push it aside or you treat it in a way that's unhealthy or whatever. So I thought, you know, I don't know how much of us out there are talking about these things, but I thought it would just be a good, like, companion to that physical fitness part.
Yeah, I mean, when you mentioned it, I mean, we've been talking about doing this for a while, but when you brought it up, I immediately thought that seemed like a great idea, and it was just a matter of timing it. And it was sort of funny, we accidentally, this month, November, is that Movember thing, where mm-hmm. is a drive to raise money for awareness for depression and things like that about men. And so I didn't time it for that, but it just sort of worked out that this is the same month that this is happening. It's sort of funny that you talk about how, you know, yes, the group, whether it be podcasting or specifically the Geek Fitness group or nerd stuff in general, is generally men. And men, of course, are like, we don't want to talk about stuff. And it's sort of funny because, I mean, as nerds, as geeks, you know, we kind of are like swimming upstream against that anyway, because we're into all sorts of stuff that sort of society up until very recently was telling us you're not supposed to be into, you know?
Yeah.
So we're already kind of by our very nature, a touchy feely kind of group. I mean, good Lord, I spend most of my time talking about things. Now, it's mm-hmm. nerd-related stuff, but it's still talking. I'm not out there banging into stuff. I'm out there, you know, sharing my feelings about the last, you know, about a 35-year-old episode of MASH, for Pete's sakes. And yet, I still have that same kind of thing of like, well, you know, you don't want to maybe burden people, or you don't want to, like, go too far down that road about your anxiety. At the same time, and you know, I'm going to just say right at the outset of the show, there's probably going to be things that are going to get said here that maybe I wouldn't be comfortable saying in another context, but I'm also trying to do my best to be as sort of open and honest about this, because that's what the point of this show is. But I also, you know, I don't want to turn this into the autobiographical hour. You know, the names mm-hmm. and events have been changed to protect the innocent kind of thing.
Except for Shag.
I mean, I will say part of my mental health is just podcasting with someone else other than Shag. That is really helping my mental health. But so thank you, Tom. But I mean, like my whole life, my entire life, I have been of a depressive nature. Now, has it been like medically defined? No, no, it hasn't. And I've always been a little gun shy about even saying that, because I have friends that do suffer from straight up depression, like clinically defined, clinically, you know, identified depression. And I don't like to kind of like even throw myself in with that group, because that feels like I'm insulting them a little, like I'm not taking their problems as seriously. Yeah. But at the same time, I think I generally am of a depressive nature. I think I tend to worry about things more than maybe mm-hmm. I should. And I tend to just look at the negative of things. I mean, I have a friend of mine who jokes about sometimes where he's like, you just don't like to have fun, do you? And I know he's kidding and I'm kidding, but it's also kind of not, you know, where I'm like, yeah, sometimes now I – and so that has been something I've struggled with my whole life. I just have that kind of just Charlie Brown kind of mentality, and that's – I've just gotten used to it at this point. I don't like it, but that's just kind of who I am, and it's exhausting.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned how you've never been like I guess technically medically diagnosed with anything, and how, because I'm kind of the same way. And this is what's tough about things with mental health, is that like my thing is that I have always been in some ways or another pretty high strung, and so is my sister, and the two of us have talked in recent years about, you know, maybe we suffer from anxiety and we never really knew it, because you know, we both do know people who have legitimately diagnosed and treating or being treated with, you know, issues of, you know, depression and anxiety, et cetera. We don't want to say like, we don't want to be those people who are like, you know, oh, I'm depressed or whatever. And mm-hmm. you feel like, you know, feel like you're kind of minimizing what right. is actually, you know, right. happening with them. But at the same time, like I come from a place, or, you know, growing up in Long Island, but growing up in the area where I did and around the people I did, I come from a mentality of, we don't talk about these things,
right.
you know, so the fact that I could have had, you know, I've become more and more convinced in recent years that it's very possible that I had also have some form of ADHD, and just because of the fact that I, you know a lot of teenagers with it, because I'm a teacher,
sure.
and knowing a lot of the characteristics and recognizing them in myself from when I was 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, all the way up until, like, you know, through my teen years. And then just kind of like, you know, having those epiphanies over the last few years, like, holy crap, is that really, maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But with anxiety, it's kind of this, you know, anxiety and depression kind of go hand in hand. And the anxiety is the same way, where, like, you know, about a little more than a year ago, I had a panic attack, and I never had them before. And it was, granted, something, without getting in too much into the details, something of that day had triggered it. From there, I started taking it a lot more seriously. It's because, like, well, why did you have that? Why have you always, you know, you've been in situations like that before? And then I think back to, like, you know, all the times where I was really worked up and really high strung over something. And I'm like, you know, is there something manifesting itself? So, yeah, so that was part of kind of admitting it to yourself, but also kind of like trying to seek out, okay, what is actually the answer going on here? Because you really are kind of piloting your own ship in some way to go see somebody or figure it out, whether it's through a self-help book or what have you. Because like I said, it's not like you have a cough, you know?
Right, yeah. I mean, so. the idea of you're the one steering your own ship, you know what I mean? And it's like you said, you don't want to necessarily indulge yourself too far, but you don't want to not indulge yourself at all because that's just as bad. But I mean, you know, I mean, that can get tricky. And I've never had a I don't think I've ever had an anxiety attack necessarily, maybe the way it's defined. But I have gotten a little better at figuring out the moments where I'm like, well, I am just so stressed today over a bunch of events that I need to just chill out. And, you know, I will admit that, you know, part of my frustration, and this is, you know, it's hard because, you know, it is what it is. But part of my frustration does come from the fact that I have the belief that except for a couple of, relatively minor cases. And, you know, you mentioned politics at the beginning of the show, and it's hard to it's hard to get away from that topic because if you're pro what's going on right now in this country, you're filled with anxiety. You may not know it, but you are. Because I tend to think if you're pro what's going on in this country in terms of our leadership, you're pretty filled with anxiety about, you know, brown people. And if you're anti what's going on in this country, then you're full of anxiety because you're anti what's going on. But I am also of the belief for the most part that I think that capitalism as a system is killing most of us. It just is. For the lucky few that have a career that they say they love, that they genuinely love doing, and you may be one of those people because you're a teacher, and I know that for a lot of people that's a calling. My job is not a calling; it's a job. I go to it because I have to. I go to it because if I don't, I will starve to death, and I don't want to starve to death. So, but at the same time, I do believe that for the most part, I think capitalism is killing most people. It is grinding us into dirt through poverty and anxiety and overwhelming workloads. And to me, it's very hard to get away from that because you can't turn it off. And in terms of some of the things, there have been days, and it's only been recently that I've had the moments to where to say, you know what, I am so mega stressed today, I'm not going into work. I need to do something. And it's not even necessarily because the job is the thing that's doing it to me, but it's I am so stressed that I just need a break to do something else. It's kind of tough to – you don't want to tell people that because it's it sounds whiny. You know, it's, oh, poor baby, you're having – but at the same time, you're like, I just need to not do my regular routine today. I need a break in this, you know, whether, and I need to do whatever it is going to work for me. We can get into that, but what the things you do to
help.
But I mean, you know, sometimes it's like, I really want to sit at home and watch Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home today. That's what I need to do. And in terms of self-medicating, that's a pretty genteel way of doing it. I'm not going to a bar. I'm not, you know, doing crazy shit. I just need to just sit and watch this movie that entertains me. And I've gotten good at being able to figure that out and at times.
Well, yeah, and actually, I've had conversations with people in my profession about this over the years where there is a sense that it's a calling, but I never believe in fully buying into that because there are aspects of what I do for a living that is essentially a job. And the previous place where I worked, you know, I would sit there with like – there were like three or four of us who have all left that school. The last one left at the end of last year. And we would sit around. We would get together for happy hour after, you know, on a random Friday, and we'd have a couple of drinks, and we would sometimes sit around and have serious conversations. We were talking about, okay, like the next hiring cycle is coming up, you know, are you applying here and there? And you do in that where you feel trapped in that particular environment, and the place where I work was very, very toxic in terms of a culture, in terms of a work culture, student culture, etc. And we would have that conversation of, do you want to quit teaching or do you want to quit teaching here? And like we would go into being there, keeping in mind what was positive, some of the relationships we had with some of the kids was very positive. The relationships we had with each other kind of kept us going, especially in years where it was absolute madness. But I always tell people when we talk about stuff, you know, in teaching, I always say, like, it's okay to think of it as a job every once in a while,
right?
Because it detaches you a little bit. And because – And it's not I know it's not just me who feels this way, but there are times when you're a teacher, and it's not just teaching, it's any other job, where you basically go through your entire day feeling like you're doing something wrong, like, you know, like just this constant feeling of like, what am I gonna screw up right now or whatever, and it's not you really haven't done anything, but it's, again, that's anxiety talking. You're like, you mm-hmm. know, like, what did I do, and you're second guessing yourself. And if you think too much of the profession and the job as like way more important than it actually is, and not saying that our jobs aren't important in some way, then that's your quickest way to burn out. You develop a martyr complex. I mean, there's like all these things. So it's okay to like step back and take a job, come down with essayitis, and stay home for a day to supposedly grade essays when you're watching. In my case, I had this rotating crop of like 80s and 90s movies. I think on a regular basis for the better part of a couple of years, I'd either throw in Singles or Reality Bites for some reason. I don't know why. Well, I know Reality Bites. It involved Winona Ryder.
Oh, well, there you go.
But yeah, I can be the same way. And the frustrating thing is, and I'm not, I am no way an expert on anything economic. You know, I read up on things, and I'm very open-minded as far as it's concerned, so I don't subscribe to like one view over another. But I do agree with you, because there's this work ethic and this one-upsmanship and this that having worked in the corporate world before I became a teacher, because I was in marketing for years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I had a career for about like 4 or 5 years in marketing before we finally decided to move, down here. And I was in legal marketing for the last year of that. And it's this, you know, pardon my French, it's this dick measuring contest in the corporate world of, you know, like who puts in the most hours, which is like all of that. And I left that culture. My wife and I were both tired of that culture, especially because we were working in Washington. So it was just like, you know, bro culture plus political culture. And you're just like, I can't take this anymore. It will kill you. The other frustrating thing is, and this is where the kind of the economics get in there, there are people who keep their jobs, not just because they have to feed themselves, but because it provides health insurance.
Yes.
And there's, I mean, like I said, I don't know what the solution is. I don't know how to, you know, I have to do some more research before I concretely pick a side for a solution to this problem. But there is something inherently wrong with tying your employment to health insurance.
It's insane. I was old enough to finally understand that that's what we did, I was like, wait, what? What? Why does your job? What does my healthcare have to do with my boss? What do those two things have to do with each other?
So we have that, and then we have like, you have the stress of, you know, of the financial stress of life of being an adult, you know, paying your mortgage, paying your rent, paying your bills. If you do get sick physically, it can cost you a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then mentally, it's like, you know, I mean, thankfully, like when I go to therapy, it's covered under my health insurance and I pay a copay. But even then, that's like, you know, it's still money out of your pocket and everything. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot weighs on you as far as work is concerned. But then we have other things like, you know, a lot of us were, you know, kind of like, I'm looking at the things that we have. Like what caused this, you know, before we were, you know, were we always like this, or was this caused by work? Did work exacerbate this? You know, I look back beyond work. I look at family and I look at, you know, my childhood and my teenagers and I lived a very charmed life. You know, I am, make sure I get all of the descriptors here. I am a male, middle-class white, I am a middle-class white cisgendered heteronormative male who grew up in the suburbs My parents are still together. They've been married for almost 50 years. They lived in the same house since before I was born. So I was born on Long Island, grew up in the same town, left, went to a private college in Baltimore, and have a house in the suburbs with a wife and a kid. I mean, there is just like, all the boxes are checked. I am the most like boring ass description for a person.
Down with the patriarchy.
Exactly. Well, nothing in that suggests that I should have any problems. And yet.
Yes.
I look back at things when I was younger and I'm like, I'm still dealing with the fact that people, just without getting into too much detail about it. And I've written about it in other places that people who were supposedly my friends back when I was in high school and college, really kind of treated me like shit for a long time and not realizing that because, I was one of those people who just really wanted friends. So just like things like that start to come up as you start to acknowledge hey, maybe I should start kind of treating myself with this. And you start looking at the root cause of things. And there are things that are 20 years old that you really didn't get over. Because they're manifesting themselves now in a different form. It's just a pattern, a repeating pattern of behavior.
There are so many branches from what you just said that I want to follow up on that I don't know which one to go down.
I told you in planning, this is more than one show.
Yeah, this is going to be more than one show. One brief comment is I will say, I will say straight up, I regard myself as a failure in a great many ways. And that is only compounded by the fact that I am like you. A cisgender, white, straight male, middle class kid who, whose parents are still married and has had every opportunity. I have never had a door shut for me because of who I am, because of what I look like.
Yeah.
I've never gone to a Comic-Con where I've had to prove my bona fides because of what I look like. What I mean? I mean, I haven't read a Batman comic in 25 years, but no one's ever going to question me about my nerd credentials because of what I look like. And so that only eats away at me further that it's like, wow, I've had every opportunity that this country affords people like me, and I'm still in many ways a failure in my own eyes. And that bothers me even more that it's like, wow, I've had every chance, and yet I've still kind of fucked up. And that bothers me. But getting off of that, getting off of that track for a moment, I mean,
yeah.
One of the things we wanted to talk about is how do you self-help? Do you do it yourself? Do you seek therapy? Do you do medication? Do you all three? And it's sort of funny because I noticed that it's a trap that I set for myself where I am not terribly happy in my current employment position. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I am always looking for something better. But that I find looking for jobs to be depressing, not fun, having to constantly restate the same information over and over and over and over again. When you're going down into page 6 of an application and you're like, really, you need the address of an employer 5 employers ago? You really need that information for me to apply for this fucking job? And so I often don't apply for jobs. And what do? I podcast.
Yeah.
Because that makes me happy. I'm doing it right now. I mean, I would rather sit in front of a microphone and talk about something than look for a job. But I also know that podcasting is not going to help me get out of the situation that I find myself in. But yet that's what makes me happy. So I'm kind of like kicking myself in that it's like, well, you could be doing this thing that isn't fun to help improve your life. Or you could give yourself a break and have a little bit of fun on your evenings. But then, of course, me recording a podcast about old Super Friends comics is not going to help me get a better job.
That's a good point. But at the same time, there's that I've been unemployed before. And I've done the thing where I remember this was years ago. So this is when people were still using, monster.com for resumes and things like that. But, I remember the pattern of getting up in the morning – I don't think we were married yet. My girlfriend, then my fiance, would go to work and I'd be up with her, showered, shaved, dressed, breakfast and everything. And I get on the computer and I do that day's crop of resumes. And it was always like, I'm going to send this many out. And after a while, you kept seeing the same jobs over and over.
Right.
But by 10 o'clock in the morning, I was done, at least in the first week. And then maybe some calls come through and you force yourself to do it. So you feel you can do something, and it was always my way of justifying the fact that I was going to spend the rest of the day watching movies or going hiking or visiting a museum or something, like, you know, basically what can I do for free or, you know, or on the very, very cheap. But no, I totally understand that. And there is that like sense of if there was anything that really could have been brought to somebody's attention when I was younger, they probably didn't know because I was very, very good at making it look like I was fine. I was a student. I was an honor student in high school. You know, I graduated in the top like 10% of my class, and that translated to actually a pretty rough first semester of college because I was basically thrown in the deep end with like rooming with a bunch of guys and did not adjust well to, you know, my grade point average dropped and everything. But at the same time, when I was in high school, you know, I suffered from that same sort of anxiety of like feeling like a failure, even though I'm getting A's, and wanted to do things that were not conducive to, you know, the career I was going to go on or something like that. You know, I sat around and I wanted to write, you know, podcasts didn't exist back in the early 90s, but I wanted to write. I wanted to listen to music. I wanted to, you know, just come up with stupid short stories that I would send to my friend out in Florida and stuff. And I did it kind of on the sly or when my homework was done, because I didn't want to seem like I was wasting my time all the time. You know, and it kind of translates into this as well. You know, I think I overload myself with projects and have to kind of take a step back of like, you know, because there's so many unfinished drafts in my various folders and notebooks and things like that. But in terms of sending out, I'm like, oh yeah, I'll submit that resume tomorrow. I'll fill out that application that basically asked me to rewrite everything that's already on my resume. Why am I sending you the resume if I have to fill out this application?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then there's networking.
Oh.
Which, oh, fucking God. Nobody likes it, you know. And I have an advantage. My wife works for an alumni career services department and literally helps people with resumes, cover letters, interview, like, coached me through the interview for the job I have now. So like, you know, I have very little excuse for it, but I totally understand you when you're like, no, I just want to go do this fun thing, because it is kind of a little bit of self-medicating.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Alcoholism does run in my family. So I'm very, very cognizant of that particular vice and that particular way of dealing with your problems. But yeah. Yeah, we're looking at, like, you know, your self-help and the way you self-medicate, whether it's through avoidance or what. There's a whole section of the bookstore on self-help.
Yeah, then that tells you something about how large self-help sections are. And, well, there used to be bookstores, you know, when there were bookstores. Mm-hmm. How large – what is that? That tells you about a society when the self-help section is that big.
Now, and some of it is very, very helpful, no pun intended, because some of it is very real about – and some of it is basically like snake oil salesman.
Yes.
You know, it's like a traveling medicine show from the late 1800s, you know. So you do have to watch out of that. But then there's also on the other side of it, medication. And you don't need to go to a psychiatrist to get like antidepressants. You just need to go to your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I take a very, very low dose of an anti-anxiety medication every morning, and it's literally like 5 milligrams or something. It's not very much, because I was getting tension headaches, and I was getting, you know, I could not wind down, could not stop being tense. So I went to my doctor and he was like, you know, just take this. And I was taking one pill, and he said, you'll feel a jolt when it kicks in.
Wow.
but then it'll smooth out. So
you have superpowers for an hour then at that point, right?
I'm hour man. I don't know what doing cocaine is like, but this is what it felt like. It was all of a sudden, it was like I had 3 or 4 cups of coffee, like really quickly. So I cut all the pills in half and I take half a pill. And I had told him that. He's like, no, you can adjust your dosage and then you just talk to me and see what we need to do. And I really have not, you know, the only other thing that's been happening is lately I've been grinding my teeth in my sleep. So I've been wearing one of those mouth guards. I'm like, I have a mouth guard and a CPAP machine. I'm hooked up like, I look like Luke in the Bacta tank in The Empire Strikes Back when I sleep at night. It's crazy, but the medication did help. But even then, like I said, it's one of those things that is like crazily overprescribed.
Yeah,
you know, Prozac, Xanax. I'm on Buspar. You know, like these things are Zoloft. These things you can get, like, and they're not expensive. Like the copay on a prescription for that is really cheap. I think it's less than $20. Whereas, like, it's cheaper than the anti-inflammatory I take because I have high levels of uric acid and tend to get gout when I weigh too much. And, you know, I think it's like $7 for my anti-anxiety prescription as opposed to 21 for my other thing. Asthma medication is like $30 for a prescription. So that's how like easily available these things are. And a lot of people go on them and, you know, some of them really, really need it. And some of them, they're just quick to prescribe it.
Yes.
So it's a gamble in a big way.
Yeah, one of the features of my job is that I have to have a television on all the time because we have to pay attention to the ads that are running because that's part of what I do. And, you know, I noticed that, you know, a large chunk of any ads run on any given 9-hour period of television are for medication, you know, for anxiety medication. And again, I feel like what does that say about us as a people? That we're self-medicating that heavily and that we need to be that self-medicated. And I will say, and I know we're kind of jumping around a little bit, but I think that's just the nature of this discussion is that, you know, I am very fortunate and you are too, that we have discovered this weird little pocket of existence as like a podcaster. And we have found this thing that is relatively inexpensive to do. And it's not it's relatively harmless, you know, in a lot of ways. It's not like you're like, oh, I enjoy, you know, what really, you know, de-stresses me? Hunting, you know, like, well, yeah, that's a lot of dead things, you know, for you to feel better about yourself. You know, it's like, I feel really good when I record a show that I know has gone really well. I feel great. You know, I feel wonderful. I'm like, wow, this is why I do this for this conversation, you know, for this kind of thing. And I've been very, very fortunate that we sort of, again, that I've stumbled my way into this. And I've said this on other episodes about how, you know, my whole life was devoted to focused on being an artist. And a lot of people don't know this, but I went to the Joe Kubert School and I, you know, became an artist. And then that all fell out from underneath me. And, you know, I had to reorganize my life at 40 years old. I mean, what happens when you've achieved your career goal and then it dies on you? I mean, what do you do at that point? You know, we don't have stories like that in movies and in popular culture. People get their dream job and that's the end of the movie. They don't lose their dream job in the middle of their life. And that's what happened to me. And I've had to reorient myself. And creatively, I've found podcasting right at the moment that my art career went belly up. And it's been I've been extraordinarily lucky to know so many wonderful people through this medium. And so again, it goes back to what we were talking about, how you self-medicate. And in this case, I do. I'm not on any sort of medication for anxiety. Cause again, it's never been diagnosed. I've never felt it's gotten to that point. And this tips a little into another topic that you wanted to discuss, which is about like how scary it can be when you realize you're in charge of your own decisions.
Yeah.
So how do you know if you're making the right choice? And one specific thing that I will bring up related to that is, and I'm not going to get too far into the details of it because it's obvious, but many of you that listen to my shows know that I had, this has been a pretty big year for me in terms of my personal upheaval. I ended a long relationship and that was not, it was a long time coming and it was very difficult to figure out whether this was the right decision or not because as you know, I mean, yeah, I have my feelings about things, but I could also just be wrong. You know, you can, you know, just because they're your feelings doesn't mean that they're not that they're quote unquote the correct one. You can be perceiving something incorrectly. And one of the things that I did and the thing that really saved my life in a lot of ways was as it became clear to me that I felt like I needed to make some sort of change, I went and consulted a very, very small group of people. One, including my sister and then some friends. And I sort of did a weird little tour of them and I told them what was going on and I consulted them about what to do about it. And, you know, I had an idea of what I think I needed to do, but I wanted to see how well that lined up with what they were telling me.
Yeah.
And luckily, for my sanity, all these people said virtually the exact same thing. So I was like, well, okay, I'm not crazy. You know, they're all seeing this the same way. And in one specific instance, and I will, again, I'm always dancing around getting too into the details of this thing. But earlier in the year, I consulted one of my closest friends. And at the time, he had just entered into a new relationship as well. Well, no, I was not, and I didn't have a new one at that point, but he had just entered into a new relationship after a very long marriage of his had ended. And I said to him, well, I want to get together and I want to tell you what's going on with me personally. Mm-hmm. And so he says to me, oh, well, then obviously you don't want X to come along because, you know, while she is his girlfriend, I don't know her. I hadn't even met her to this point. And so he was like, obviously, you don't want to share all this private stuff in front of her. And I understand that. So I'll just make sure it's just me. And I had wanted to meet this woman because I know she means a lot to my friend. And I said, no, you know what? Fuck it. Bring her. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up having lunch. And I ended up telling one of my closest friends some of my deepest, darkest secrets. And also telling this woman, who I was essentially a complete stranger, all of these things, including stuff about my sex life and things that I would never want to say. And it, in a weird way, it felt very liberating to just not worry about it. And they ended up giving me really solid advice, and all the people that I consulted were incredibly helpful. And I look at that group of people as they really did save my sanity, because if I had not had those people to consult, I don't know what I would have done. I might have been like, well, I think this is the right thing to do, but I'm going to be filled with anxiety over it because I don't know if it's the right thing to do. But the fact that I had these people whom I trusted and in some cases have known me, my sister's case, known me my entire life, and some friends that have known me for a quarter century could tell me, no, I see what you're saying, and yeah, this is this, or here, did you think of this? And it, you know, that was my way of self-medicating, was like, oh, I'm fortunate enough that I had these friends. And to that end, post the end of this relationship, I have tried to make more effort to be there for other people, because I feel like, you know what, there are people who are going through stuff that's similar to what I'm going through, and maybe they don't have as many people to talk to. So I have tried to make the effort via social media, via personal visits or whatever, to try and be that person to be the person that they were for me, is to be able to be like, look, just don't worry about it. Just tell me whatever you need to tell me and not worry about it so much. And that has been a huge help. And I don't know where I would be if I didn't have that group of people. I really don't know where I would be right now.
That's amazing too, because not everybody, not everybody has, you know, that. And I was trying to think as you were talking about, like, you know, times, where I've been on the receiving end of what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. I've been the friend who talks to the friend who's having a real problem. And I had, and that was something that, like, when I think back to my late teens and my early 20s, I had at least one friend from high school who really went through a hard time in her early, from about the time she was 19, probably until about, like, our late 20s. It was just very, very rough, you know, relationships, family. And me and some of her other friends were just there, you know. And it was, sometimes it was very, very deep conversations. Sometimes it was just a night at a pool hall and a beer, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, having been on the other side of that, I understand, like, the value of it. And, you know, I don't take myself so seriously that I think, like, you know, I'm your rock or something like that. But, you know, that's always something I've always been trying to be there for, you know, friends. And I've always found it amazing that, you know, over the years, I've for the better part of, like, going on 20 years now, there are people I've met who I've become close to because of, like, fandom. And in our case, podcasting and comics and movies or TV shows and stuff. And some of my, you know, and people I may have met once in real life, maybe not even met at all in real life. But because, you know, we met on a message board or something like that and had the side conversations about real life stuff other than what we were talking about, those friendships formed and stuff. So I've always been kind of in orbit of people that, and knowing that when I've had issues and problems that surround either relationships or family or friendships and things like that, there are people I can go to. And I have, like, I've been married for 16 years now, and I've been with my wife since, you know, we met in college 23 years ago, and she's like the first person I go to with issues like this. Sometimes I do feel guilty because I'm like, you know, you shouldn't have to burden all my problems. It is marriage though, because we do that for each other. But it is very, very helpful to have somebody, even if it's not somebody who's like always there, you know, with you 24/7, because you do have somebody who's a sounding board, but you also, and like what you were describing, you also intend to pay it back when necessary. And it can keep you from really doing something destructive. Whether or not you realize it's destructive, you know, it can keep you from doing something like, you know, drinking or doing something like blowing something up in a metaphorical way.
Yeah.
It's not speaking literally. And I think, you know, but when you feel like you don't have that support network, I think that's when you go to therapy, because there is in the very least somebody who will listen to you. And it's a very, very weird scenario to be in, because you have to find somebody who you feel comfortable with. And it's essentially establishing a relationship with somebody. It's a professional one, but you're telling them things that you've told other people that you don't talk to, like the person who works down the hall from you, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and you're paying them to do it. But it's, you know, so you have to, you shouldn't feel, if you're going to a therapist or something, you shouldn't feel afraid to change that person if it's not working out. And like, I remember it took a couple of sessions of just kind of me awkwardly rambling, you know, to do that, because I did not know what I was doing. There was no instruction manual for me as far as, you know, how to talk about your problems goes and stuff like that. So
I've never seriously considered consulting a therapist, but the anxiety I have about going to therapy, which is like a double whammy, is that my problems wouldn't even be that interesting. Like, I really have this fear that like a therapist would be sitting there with their pad going, really? Like, you know, like, you don't even have that really that big of a deal. Like, I don't know. It's like, not only are you here, you're not even interesting. That would be my other really horrible fear.
That was my thought, too. It was like, are you fucking kidding me with this?
Yeah, because it's like my problem.
I hope the shit clears.
Right. Yeah, I mean, again, I go back to the fact that I'm a white male, a straight white male. I just don't have a lot of these external things pushing at me. It really is all internal. And a lot of times when it's internal, you do tend to blame yourself, because then you get this feeling of like, well, just get at, you know, just snap out of it. You know,
that's always
advice people give you. Just, you know, stop whining so much. Like, well, all right, I understand that. But at the same time, it's like, if this thing is really eating away at you in your skull, how do you turn it off?
Yeah. And, you know, like one of my hangups, like I said earlier, was that, you know, I've always had friends, but I've had friends people I considered close friends who really kind of, you know, when I look back, it's like, kind of kept me around as like I was always the butt of the joke. And, you know, when you go through that through a long time, and the people who are like, you know, around you, you become hesitant to be, you know, jump in and be extroverted toward everybody. And I'm pretty introverted socially. I tend to hang back. I can, you know, I can play extrovert. I can play friendly. You know, I'm not standing in the corner the whole time, but I am one of those people who, you know, always needs that sort of recharge. And so a lot of my anxiety, at least at the root of it, can be social because of just situations where, you know, in the past where I just was, you know, not treated the best way. But even then I sit there and I'm like, you know, why don't you get over your shit?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you do beat yourself up about it because, and you have to, you, there was something I was listening to an episode of a podcast, and I don't remember which one it was, but the people were talking about some of these issues and things like that. And they used the phrase, your experiences are valid. And this idea that, and I think this gets augmented by like social media, we're not playing the mental health Olympics here. You know, you're not getting a gold medal for, this is going to sound really, really glib, and I don't mean to offend anybody. You're not getting a gold medal because you swallowed a bunch of pills and chased it with a bunch of vodka or something like that. You know, there's, you know, and you're not finishing in last place because, you know, you're like you and me who are like, you know, what do we have to do compared to this person? It's like, you know, the experiences that you have are
right.
valid.
Yeah.
Because they're valid because they happen to you. Mm-hmm. And they're the source of something that you have to figure out. And if you can, even if you don't have, you don't have to tell the person who's having like really, really deep problems, who really, really is looking for support. You don't have to tell them that. You know, you have to say, well, I have problems too, and they pale in comparison to yours, because it's not going to make them feel better. But at the same time, it's like, don't minimize yourself because of what you see in the sphere of people who, you know, of people with other problems. You know, like if there's something that is an experience that or a problem that you're having, it's okay to seek help, whether it's reading up about it on a reputable website. You know, playing Dr. Google can be risky.
Oh yeah.
Or it's going and seeing a therapist, is going through like your, like I said, my insurance has what's called the EAP. You call, they set you up with somebody a little bit through a referral. And in my case, I think I got like 3 or 4 free sessions before I actually had to start paying. So it's kind of one of those, it's usually meant for a short-term thing. And then you can kind of decide on what care you want beyond that. Or you go to your GP and you're like, you know what, I have a, you describe what's been going on, and yeah, they might prescribe something, but it might be something that's temporary. And at the very least, you're acknowledging the fact that there's something that's bothering you, or there's something that's wrong. And that's a really big first step, especially if you're a man.
Yeah.
Which sounds sexist, but men are not good at these things, because men have been raised either explicitly or implicitly that acknowledging your feelings, getting upset over them, is being a pussy.
Mm-hmm.
And even if that's not the way your father raised you, the men you might have been around in a community where you grew up, you know, the guys in high school, you know, or whatever, that's the message you received. And it's hard to shake that. It's almost like programming. You know, the idea that, you know, I really, really wish that we would see more grown men cry on television.
You know, it's really funny you say that, and because and I won't get into the nitty gritty of it, because it's for people who haven't seen it, it doesn't matter. But there, I mean, as everyone knows, one of the shows I do is MASHcast, and like that is something that show has always, of course, you know, fronted by Alan Alda, Mr. Touchy Feely. That, you know, that show spoke to me as a child, because it was men being able to be open about their feelings with one another in a way that, you know, like really spoke to me. I mean, it wasn't until it really only been until the last couple of years of my life that I have felt comfortable telling like another male friend that like I love them. You know, mm-hmm. like I've not been comfortable saying that. You know, I'm not trying to lay the blame or anything at different people, but like I shocked my. Everyone knows, I have a new woman in my life. I'm very lucky to know her, named Kelly. She's wonderful, and her parents are wonderful. And I shocked her mother the other day, telling her that in the 6 months since I've known her mother, I have gotten more hugs from her than I have from my father in my entire life. And my, you know, this woman was like, "What?" You know, she just couldn't believe it, because that's not how her family. You know, they're very, very touchy and huggy and stuff like that. And, you know, again, it's only been fairly recently that I felt okay with telling another male friend, like, I love them. This is how much they mean to me. And it feels weird even me saying that out loud on a microphone. And it's going to take a lot of effort not to edit it out, to be honest. And so if you're hearing it, everybody, you know that I didn't. But that's, again, and you know, and I was a guy that spent his whole life inside reading comic books, not playing sports. And even then, I still have that kind of like, oh, no, you got to be kind of thick-skinned a little or whatever. And it's, I mean, again, we don't have to get into the details of it, but we see that so much of the violence that goes on in this country is from white men. You know, it's from especially men, because we don't know how to process our feelings in a lot of ways, and so we externalize it, and in a lot of cases commit acts of violence. And you know, some of these monsters do it in a literal sense, where they grab a gun and go kill people, and then the rest of us commit more internal violence, which is like, you know, forcing yourself to go to work on a day you just can't do it, you know, or forcing yourself through something when you just can't do it. And again, it's only been in the last couple of years where I've realized there was a day a couple of months ago where I was like, I had so much podcasting stuff I wanted to do that I was like, you know what? I literally want to do nothing else on planet Earth right now except sit at my computer and do all the podcasting stuff that I want to do. Notes on this show, record this bit for this show, edit Shag out of this other show. And I was like, I was like, okay. And I took the day off from work. I just called and said, I'm not coming in. And I just lied and said I was sick. And I spent the entire day doing podcasting stuff. And I felt great because I was like, this was something that I really wanted to do for myself. And I realized that it felt weird to say that out loud to anybody. Like, I just want to work on podcasts today because it sounds lazy. It sounds ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, I was like, this is what I need for my mental health right now to do.
Yeah. Well, and you and I both know the labor that actually goes into editing these shows. I was editing one last night. I'm like, I got to make this deadline by Saturday. And it's about half done, and I got to do the rest tomorrow because my parents are coming on Friday. And I, you know, so it's just this whole, you're doing all the math in your head. And you know, like kind of parsing out your little to-do list is something that's been very, very helpful to me because I do tend to overload. And then I get that pile of shit that I have to do, and I'm like completely overwhelmed.
Yep.
That I'm just like, I'm not going to do anything. Or I stress eat. So,
which brings us back to geek fitness.
Yeah, I know. Well, there's a connection there as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But yeah, it's the mess, and being a father of a 12-year-old boy is, you know, it comes up in my mind as well. You know, because he's a kid who has a great imagination. He likes comics. He likes fantasy. Like he loves playing like Legend of Zelda games and things like that, you know, and he's been reading, you know, he still reads stuff about like mythology and fantasy and stuff where some of his friends are like, have gotten like really deep into stuff that's sports, and he likes running, you know, that's his new sport of choice. He played soccer for a while, so he's not inactive, but at the same time, it's like, you know, how do I navigate the question I'm always asking myself, like, you know, how do I navigate this minefield that is middle school? Because I had a shit time in junior high.
Me too, yeah.
And so I don't want to project my bullshit from 30 years ago.
Yes, yeah.
But at the same time, there's that protective aspect of being a parent where it's like, you know, when he does get upset at something, you know, letting him get upset in private and, you know, talking to him about it. But at the same time, like, you know, how much do I talk to him about being around other people and, you know, putting on that shell so that, you know, to protect yourself, because speaking from experience of having ways you reacted to things, having things come back to haunt you in that way. But like, wait a second, am I perpetuating this toxic masculine culture that we're part of? It is a really weird, delicate balance of things of like, you know, and the whole time you think you're like fucking up completely, you know, like, I swear, like I joked about how teaching is like you constantly think that you're doing something wrong. Fatherhood is basically always thinking you're one wrong move away from being Harry Chapin in Cats in the Cradle.
The great Santini.
Yeah, it's just like, but it is. It's one of those things where like when we're navigating this and like as somebody who's like, you know, still trying to figure himself out in some ways. In that way, like, you know, and has dealt with issues of like self-esteem and confidence and stuff like that, you know, helping to guide him through his own and also make his own decisions and be more independent and not feel pressure in the way I would put pressure on myself at that age. So it's just like, and you get yourself worked up about it, about things that aren't really happening. And it's just, you know, which is something that somebody with anxiety can do, which is catastrophize. Think catastrophic.
Catastrophic
thinking. Like the idea that like you start to worry to the point where like you get so wrapped up in the worrying that you that sometimes you actually do end up having an anxiety attack, but like usually like you do seem like you're not having a good time or whatever because you're constantly worried about something going wrong that you know rationally is not going to go wrong. But that irrational part of you is taking over and it's picking at you and picking at you. And the conscious part of you is like, no, this is fine. Everything's going to be okay. But like then there's that thing in the back of your mind that's like, no, you fucked up. All these horrible things are going to happen. You're like, no, I know. No. And it's this, you know, not that there are voices in your head, but it's almost like there are, and they're fighting with each other for control of the situation.
Part of the reason, I mean, there's multiple reasons, obviously, but part of the reason I've never had children is because I learned at a certain point that I was probably completely incapable of raising the kind of person that I would want to raise. And I don't mean that they have to like the things I like. I don't mean that. But I mean, like, I was a child, and I still am, like, riddled with anxiety about screwing up. I'm going to mess this up. I'm going to fail. And I'm like, I don't want to raise a kid and inflict that on them. And I don't think I'm capable of raising the kind of kid I would want, who would be kind of a fearless kid. And like, yeah, you know what? I fucked up. Who cares? I tried this and it didn't work. So what? Move on.
Yeah.
I'm incapable of raising someone who has that attitude. And to me, I'm like, that's essential because I know what I was like. And I know how many things that I didn't try because I was so scared of failing. And I look back on that now and I say, what a waste of time. What a waste of time it was worrying about that. And I was like, I can't inflict that on another person. That's cruel. It's bad enough that I have it, let alone creating another person like me. The world doesn't need that. And that's really been part of the rest. Like, I can't do that to some poor child out there.
I will tell you, and I'm sure that there are a number of us in this podcasting group who could probably confirm this, that like half the time we have no idea what the hell we're doing as fathers. It's just like, because I have the same fear, and I was the kid who was like scared of everything. I did not ride a looping roller coaster until I was 28 years old. And the only reason I did it was because I was a yearbook advisor at the time. And I took my editors to a workshop at the College of William & Mary in Williamsburg. And we got free tickets to Busch Gardens, the theme park in Williamsburg. And they're like, oh, yeah, we'll go and we'll ride the coasters and we'll leave. Because, you know, we were like a few hours south. And so I'm not going to – I decide, you know, you really will never live it down if you do not lose your – if you lose face in front of these, you know, your editors who are these teenage girls who you have to work with for the rest of the school year. So I rode like all the looping roller coasters in Busch Gardens. And I was like – but the funny thing was is because I was that kid and actually riding the roller coaster is a good metaphor for it, because I was that kid who sometimes would take a risk if it didn't involve a lot of thought. The longer the line for the roller coaster, the more likely I was going to pass through and just go to the other side and wait for everybody else in the end.
Genius.
Yeah. But if there was no line for Space Mountain, I was on Space Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just this thing. And it always – and this is the other thing. A lot of my anxiety over the years – and this is where I've kind of deciphered this over the course of the last couple of years – was manifested itself in stomach issues.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's irritable bowel syndrome, but it's like – and this is – I apologize, this is getting gross. Like when I'm in a very, very bad situation like that, I end up at some point having to take the largest dump in the world. And it's just like, you know, basically my stomach tightens and clenches. So I don't throw up, but I'm like, I got to go to the bathroom because it's just like, you know, so I would like for every day for like, you know, a couple of years in junior high and high school when I was going through a tough time, like I would be there during first period or right before first period seeking out the one bathroom in the school that was safe enough to go take a shit because there were doors in the stalls and people weren't in there smoking. And I did not go to the high school from Dangerous Minds. It was just you know, white suburban high school, but like the doors were not on the stalls, and it was you couldn't go. But it was just so like I've always known that's how like these things work for me. So like some people break out in a sweat, some people have to, you know, I have to go to the bathroom, and it's so I just remember years and years of this like pre something anxiety of that. And you know, so like years and years of like ticking off the risks I didn't take because I backed out because I was afraid of failing and I was afraid of like, oh, losing and stuff. And not pushing my kid to do these things, but when he wants to try something, being like, go ahead, you know? And sometimes he's like, you know, I don't think I want to do that anymore. We're like, all right, you know? Because the other thing that would always, the other thing would always guarantee that I wouldn't try it was if you tried to convince me that it was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, no, it's not that, it's not going to be that scary. See, it's not going to be that too bad. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's like, it's almost like now I don't want to do that because I'm like rebelling against you or something. It's a really irrational way of thinking, but it's like, you know, it was always like if you, and that would be like my parents on the line for the coaster. It's like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. It's not going to be too hard of a ride. And it's like, you're not helping. Let me work through my issue here and I'll get on and I'll scream my head off and I'll act like I'm having a heart attack. But I have all these things. And now I've got this kid. And I'm deathly afraid that like when he reacts to something and I see you as the way I might have reacted to something when I was his age and I'm like, oh shit, no. And I'm like, but then I'm like, I can't go into crisis mode. I should just kind of say like, you know, hey, I've been there. Talk to me about it. If you don't want to talk to me about it, you don't have to. But like, you know, maybe I can help you because I know how to deal with this situation. You know,
this sounds off topic, but I promise it isn't. Have you ever seen the movie Defending Your Life with Albert Brooks? And
years ago,
because there's a line. You remember the premise that was that he dies and he has to sort of prove that he is worthy of moving on to the next plane of existence.
Yeah, and I remember like the trams.
Right. And there's a line in it. There's a line in it where he's talking to his representative, played by Rip Torn, and they're talking about how, you know, basically if you live on Earth, your whole life is about dealing with fear. That's all that you're consumed by. And he says, Rip Torn says to Albert Brooks, did you have friends whose stomachs hurt? And he goes, every one of them. And Rip Torn's like, well, that's because they're people dealing with fear. And I'm like, oh, shit, that's me. You know, that's me. I mean, like, I still remember the night back in 5 years ago where I was up for an award for writing something. And we went to this gala and I got dressed in a suit and it was like at this fancy museum. And I ended up winning that night. But I could not eat because my stomach was in such distress. I was in such stomach pain from nervousness. And then to prove that it hasn't really gotten any better, a couple of months ago when I did the live Pod Dylan, my girlfriend will tell you, we drove over to Philly together and I was like almost doubled over in pain because I was so nervous about how it was going to go. And it's like it's your brain is just sending chemicals to your body and just screwing with you. I don't mean to keep tying this into everything that I like, because so far I've mentioned MASH and comic books and Albert Brooks. But I mean, there's a line in a Bob Dylan song, one of my favorites, where he just sings, I fought with my twin, that enemy within. And I feel like that a lot of times where it's like, well, there's nobody else in here but me. Sabotaging me, you know, and you're like, what the hell is good? Aren't we all on the same team here, pal? Like, what is that about?
Yeah, well, it's that fear of failure. It's also that fear of rejection, especially somebody who is creative.
Yeah,
you know, I've had some things published here and there, mostly an article here, an essay there, nothing like huge. But at the same time, like, you know, now part of me not going full into, you know, writing is other things take up time that actually are the things that earn me money. So, you know, you do what you can on the side. But at the same time, there also is like, you know, a huge fear of rejection, you know, or the idea that like, you know, you're going to get found out and that you're actually kind of a phony, you know, that imposter syndrome type of deal, you know, that like, you know, and that's another cause. And what that ends up doing is, you know, when you are put on the spotlight, you do get that sort of, you know, I get the same way, or I will become very sort of that klutzy hyperness of like almost bouncing off the walls because I'm so full of nervous energy that like, you know, a good stiff drink might actually help, you know, that sort of like, you know, wound up. I had to, the previous school I worked at, one of the things that I was the coordinator for was this poetry competition we used to host, and I was the MC for the assembly, and I ran the whole thing. So it was basically like I got all the judges together, and I got like all this logistics in order, and then I was the person who's standing up there on a high school stage in front of a few hundred teenagers, introducing these kids who are competing for this poetry recitation competition. And I remember one year, my friend, she was helping me out, and she was, and at one point I'm like going through my mental checklist, and she just put her hand on my shoulder. She's like, "You've got this. Calm down." And like, I always think of that whenever I'm in that moment of like, you know, because I tend to have a lot of nervous energy, especially in the first couple of months of the school year, because I'm getting to know these kids. So I am really like kind of like a pinball in, you know, and the kids are like, "Wow, you talk really fast." And I joke that it's because I'm from Long Island, but part of it is just part of it. But I really am like that. And I'm like, phew. But I know what you mean, because I was telling my therapist the other day, I get competitive, but I get competitive in a very weird way. I don't need to always win. I just don't want to finish in last place. If I'm in the middle of the pack with everybody else, I'm perfectly fine. If I win, it's great. But I don't like the embarrassment of being the one who got everything wrong, mm-hmm. or was always behind everybody else. And I think that that's part of it too. It's just like that sort of, you know, that the fear of failure, the fear of rejection, and you know, in some cases it can drive you creatively, but in other cases it can really undermine you, because you can be in the middle of a very involved creative project, whether it be writing something or producing something, and you start to second guess yourself to the point where you might finish it, but it doesn't feel satisfying, because you've convinced yourself that you're not really worth doing this, or something to undermine your confidence in the whole thing. And it's a cycle that I think we all go through, especially if we're, you know, doing something involving art in some form.
Yeah, ironically enough, it's been with podcasting has been the one area where I have kind of pushed outside my comfort zone. And there, I've gotten emails from people that say, you know, "Wow, you've landed all of these amazing guests." And I have been very fortunate to talk to a great number of really amazing people. And part of it is because I just try. You know, yeah. And I don't worry about it. I've emailed a couple of creators who have turned me down. Now, luckily, they've all been very polite about it. But I mean, for the most part, I mean, it's like, we tried. You know, people were like, "How the hell did you get, like, you know, Richard Donner on your friggin' podcast?" Well, we asked him. You know what I mean? And it would have been disappointing if he had written back and said no. But it was thank God we didn't, because we did it. You know, we got to do it. You know what I mean? So it a lot. And so it and I feel like wondering, I'm like, is it at my age now, where I am bearing down on 50, is it just now at this age that I'm getting more comfortable being that way? And I'm like, boy, you know, a little late. I mean, I guess better late than never, but it still feels like, well, this would have been helpful if I had maybe started feeling this way at 30, you know, or something. You know, maybe not so much now.
Yeah.
But I guess you get to it when you get to it.
But even though, I was impressed, because you, not just Richard Donner, but like, you know, Loretta Swit.
I've had a lot of good opportunities, I will say.
Yes. Joan Osborne impressed the hell out of me.
Talk about stomach pains. Oof.
Yeah. And I have not had there were a couple of, like, you know, comic creators where I was like, "Oh, maybe I'll get in touch with that person." And a couple of people who had talked to them were like, "Yeah, they're really easy to talk to." And I just never pulled the trigger, because mm-hmm. I was like, "Yeah, I don't want to really bother them. Right, you know, I'm going to be imposing." Right. So, you know, there were a couple of times where I thought that, oh, it would be a cool idea to reach out to this person. And, you know, it was like, almost there, and just pulled back. I was like, "Nah, they're not going to want to talk to me." And then that's what I'm talking about, because I talked to people at conventions, which I found to be pretty easy. Although I was talking to, was it Brendan Fletcher or somebody else at the Baltimore Comic Con recently. We joked about the time we both talked about the one time I've met Larry Hama, and we compared it to the Chris Farley interview thing, you know, the where you sit next to Paul McCartney. He's like,
"Remember when you did G.I. Joe?"
Yeah, stupid.
That was awesome.
It was awesome, you know. But then I did have the opportunity to sit down with Doug Murray, who did the Nom.
Oh, and then, wow, yeah.
and Wayne Van Zandt, who was the artist on that, and then just a like total like internet person. But this like one get was on one of my episodes of my show. I interviewed Sarah Bunting, who is a blogger and podcaster who's been writing for a good 20-25 years and co-created a great show, great website from the early 2000s called Television Without Pity, that kind of pioneered the pioneered the recap thing that everybody does. And she and I talked about my so-called life way back in like 2014. I mean, but that was like, to me, that was like a huge get, because like I'd been reading her writing since like 2001. So it's like, okay, I know I can do this. So why am I not reaching out to this person where it's like, I know you're here. We could talk, you know, like, or there's certain people I would love to like have on a show or interview them. And I'm like, I have to come up with an excuse. Like, how do I get this person on the show? So, but I do, at least you kind of get over that fear of it, where I still have that obstacle of like, I'm going to make a total ass out of myself. What am I doing here?
I will say I do find the anonymity of the internet to be a huge help in that regard. I would never in a million years go up to Richard Donner in public, in person, and ask him for an interview. Not in a million years. But in an email where I don't have to see his reaction when he gets it, and he can answer it at the speed that he wants to answer it, that's a whole – I mean, I'll email people left and right. I mean, let's just pull back the curtain even further. Like just a couple of weeks ago, at the time of this, you know, by the time everybody's going to hear this, I did an episode with of Mountain Comics with Roy Thomas. And everybody was like, oh, my God, how did you book Roy Thomas? Well, I pestered Roy Thomas for 6 months. That's basically how I did it. And every time he would write, you know, he would say, I can't do it this month. Can you write me back? And I'm like, yeah. And after the fifth email, I just started copping to it and saying, yeah, Roy, I know these emails are really bothering you, but unless you tell me to stop, I'm not going to. And I'm like, I would send that email. I'm like, did I just really write that to Roy Thomas? I'm like, yeah, I guess I did. But he put up with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, I kept saying, hey, if you just want to tell me no, tell me no. But unless you tell me no, I'm going to keep bothering you. And I'm like, I don't recognize that person, but I kind of like that person, because that person was kind of being bold and just like, hey, man, this is what I want. And I got to do it. You know, I got to do it. And so it ended up being a great thing. So, you know, and I didn't have any stomach pains on that one. You know what I mean? I was like, okay, I've done this enough. I can sort of handle it. So I'm kind of winding back a little bit to what we were talking about at the beginning, and that it's like, in terms of, it's so important to be able to find something for anyone who has this anxiety, to find something that they can do that in some small way self-medicates. And luckily, hopefully, it's not drinking, it's not doing drugs, it's not doing something that's harmful to you, but it's something that is personal to you. And, you know, sometimes it's just like I joked about watching Star Trek 4. There's like a handful of movies that I need to watch when I'm in a bad mood, because they always lift my spirits. No matter what mood I'm in, if I put on It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, I'm going to be smiling at the very least throughout it. And that is an important – and it's, you know, it's such a simple thing. It's just walking over and putting the Blu-ray in, and that's all that it takes.
Yeah. Is this why I've watched Can't Buy Me Love 30 million times in my life? On VHS. Still have my VHS copy. I will sit – I don't – I've sat down here in the basement and watched that. It's a shitty Patrick Dempsey movie, and yet, you know – but no, I totally understand. But for that – the movie connection, the pop culture connection for me goes all the way back to high school, because I really didn't have much of a social life aside from the friends I had, and we weren't always around every Friday night. There were entire weekends where I would go to the video store, rent 3 or 4 movies, usually some John Hughes crap, right? And just sit in my basement and watch these movies, you know, or watch the same Savage Steve Holland films over and over and over again. One Crazy Summer and Better Off Dead, man. How I got into college, I watched those three in a rotation for a while. And but there was that idea that, like,
and you know, Better Off Dead about a white guy who wants to kill himself.
Yeah, exactly. But they're comfort food, and they're comfort in terms of things. And they are, you're right, they are a little bit of therapy. And or like music can be like that. I mean, you're a huge Dylan fan.
Oh yeah.
I never had the, again, being the white, straight, suburban male, you know, outlet for anger was about as genuine as like Holden Caulfield's, right? It's like, you know, what the hell do you have to worry about? So my friends were all getting into metal and alternative in the early 90s. And, you know, and I had some music, but I will tell you, and I did an episode about this 5 years ago, like Green Day released Dookie in 1994. And it really was kind of changed my life because I discovered this whole sector of music in punk that I'd never heard of. And while I didn't dress the part at all, I was still kind of this dorky guy wearing comic book shirts and hockey jerseys and stuff. So I didn't go like all punk leather jackets and stuff. I went and found The Clash. I went and found The Ramones. I went and found The Sex Pistols and you know, other groups and stuff, and would just listen to this in addition to some of the stuff that my, you know, my friends would give me shit for because I liked REM and I liked 10,000 Maniacs and some of the lighter.
All the touchy-feely,
you know,
stuff.
All the touchy-feely stuff. Like, I fucking love Jackson Browne. I have loved
Jackson. Oh, my God,
Brown,
king of the touchy-feely.
And I have Running on Empty on vinyl, and I will throw it on and listen to it all the way through. I found Tapestry by Carole King for 50 cents at a thrift store.
That's a good buy.
And I will throw that on. I even downloaded it, so I had it on my iPod. Like, you know, and you know, I listen to a lot of Paul Simon, you know, and stuff like that, in addition to this kind of like this stuff. But music can be cathartic for a lot of people.
Oh,
and
God,
it
yes.
can be, you know, so you find that something that's a little more healthy than say, you know, the drink or the hitting things or the, you know, there's exercise, of course. I've found meditation to be really helpful over the last like 6 months to a year. I have the luxury of having a good like half an hour, 45 minutes to myself every morning before everybody else in the house gets up, mainly because I just am the first one up and out of the shower so that everybody else has, you know, hot water and, you know, that sort of stuff. So I'll go downstairs and I'll watch literally 5 minutes of the morning news just to get the weather. And then there's two apps that are really popular for meditation. One is called Calm, C-A-L-M, which is a subscription service, and I was like using a free trial. But the other one that has a ton of free stuff is called Insight Timer, and they have just a lot of guided meditations and new agey music and stuff. And they range from like, you know, quick 5 minute things and intro stuff to like, you know, stuff where you're sitting and you're meditating for like almost an hour. And I'll do like 10 to 15 minutes every morning. And even if it's not about anything, it's one of those things where, like, if you wake up and your mind is already going a million miles a minute with, like, all the shit that you have to do today, it allows you, like, 15 minutes just to kind of breathe and push those things out and just center yourself. And while it's not, like, a cure-all for the rest of my day, because I do get pretty stressed out during the day, knowing that that's part of my routine every day now is it's almost it's very grounding in that way. And it's, I know that I can like, you know, find ways to, it's one way of kind of coping with it. And actually it's helped me when I am getting really, really anxious, knowing certain techniques of calming yourself and breathing and stuff in the moment. And you're having that kind of anxious moment. And I'm trying to, I'm not a master at this or anything, but the idea that you acknowledge these feelings are there, you acknowledge this anxiety is there, you acknowledge the fact that you're really, really stressed in that moment, and you think about it, you don't try to push it out because that just kind of buries it and it comes back even worse next time, but you don't let it control you. You're like, you know, you're there, okay, calming down, and now I'm going to work through this. And it doesn't always work for me, but it's just it's a journey, but it's an ongoing process of figuring out just very natural ways to do it. And again, with something like that, when it's a free app for meditation, finding, you know, the right meditations that somebody who has a pleasant voice, you know, do you like music in the background? Do you not? You know, finding a place to do it and like little things like that. But it is one of those things that's like a really, really low risk sort of thing that you can do because it doesn't take a lot of physical exertion like exercise does. Not that you shouldn't exercise, but right. You know, not all is the time to hit the gym all the time. But it doesn't involve like, you know, poisoning your body in some sort of way or another. And I also journal on a pretty regular basis. Aside from blogging and aside from podcasting, I've been keeping a journal on and off since I was like in the seventh grade.
Holy, oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. And some of those journals, which I still have, could be fodder. You've heard of Mortified?
No.
Mortified is, there's a Netflix show called The Mortified Nation. It was a documentary called Mortified Nation. There was a Netflix show, The Mortified Guide to. Mortified is this performance thing where people read their old like journal entries and poetry from when they were like in middle high school. It is, and they have a podcast, The Mortified. It is phenomenal and it's hilarious and I highly recommend it. But some of the stuff in there, I'm like, I could totally send this their way, but I'm not. I have this thing against embarrassing myself in public, intentionally anyway.
Yeah.
Because I do plenty of it by myself, but yeah,
I do it three times a week on the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
I have a couple of podcasts, but like, you know, so going back through those junior high and high school ones, it's a lot of like, you know, random crushes on girls and things. But in recent years, it's been a lot of like, you know, working through a lot of these things in a way that, you know, because those thoughts are on my mind, kind of processing those stuff, you know. And it also helps because, again, it is a catharsis or it's a release or it's getting the shit out of my head onto a page makes me think about it a little bit less or dwell on it a little bit less. So those are a couple of things I found are very, really, really helpful for me. And even though I tend to be a perfectionist when I'm writing, this isn't something that I have to be a perfectionist about because nobody's going to read it.
Right,
so,
right. You know.
Although I do make sure that I spell things correctly.
You don't want when you die, you don't want your son to be like, oh my God, not only are these feelings very silly, they're even, he doesn't know how to use your correctly.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad you mentioned the thing about like allowing things to kind of not be okay for the moment and just focusing on something else. And that's something that I'm slowly getting better at because I am definitely a fixer. I am definitely the let's fix this problem right now. And I know that I've done it with myself and sometimes I've done it with people in my life and men tend to want to be that way anyway, especially with the women in their life where a woman comes to you with a problem and you're like, well, just do this and it won't be a problem anymore. And
that's total guy thing too. You always want – they're like, I just want to talk to you about it. You don't need to fix it for me. Trust me. I do the same.
Right. And I am getting better at – there are days where – so many things are going wrong all at the same time. There's some podcasting problem. A guest has just dropped out of me and my schedule's thrown off. And this has happened and that has happened. And I'm feeling like just everything is crumbling in all at once. And it's like, you know what? That's okay. This is not going to get fixed today. So just focus on this other thing that you can focus on. And the other thing will work itself out. But you're not going to fix it all in this moment. And that took me decades to get to where I'm just like, it's okay. And talk about exercising. That's, you know, you're talking about meditation. That is why, and bringing it back to the geek fitness thing, that's why I go and I run, because I like the solitude of it. I like doing it by myself. That's why I don't like to go to a gym, because I feel like that there's people there. I like being out on my route and my headphones are in and I am not dealing with anyone else but my own thoughts at that moment. And that's been, you know, therapeutic mentally and therapeutic physically, because then I feel better and I feel like I've moved my body a bit and I feel kind of tired, but in a good way. And I feel good about myself and stuff like that. And so it's all worked out. And so it, you know, Gene and I touched on this a little bit in our geek fitness shows about that. Yes, your physical health definitely affects your mental health, but of course it runs the other way as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I need to get better at it, because I do necessarily enjoy running or jogging, although I'm capable of it. I do like being outside and I like walking. Because apparently I'm 80, but I like hiking. I mean, I'm not a crazy experienced hiker. I'm not going to hike I would love to hike the Appalachian Trail. My uncle did it
in his
like 60s. You know, he did the whole trail from Georgia to Maine in stages. And I'm like,
wow,
damn, Roger. You know, yeah, my uncle Roger, who's like a dairy farmer up in the North Woods of Maine, like total mountain man type. But I, you know, like I live near the Blue Ridge, so I've gone on hikes into the mountains and stuff like that. And it really is therapeutic, and it's both physically and mentally and stuff. But I hate gyms.
Yeah, me too.
As well, I own a treadmill, so I don't have to go to a fitness center.
Cosmic treadmill, Tom?
No, it is not a cosmic treadmill. I don't want to know what happened to Tom on Earth 2 when he decided to accept the application to, you know, the University of Spoiled Children out in L.A.
Oh, God, the anxiety of this parallel world. So,
yeah,
so all right. So, I mean, Tom and I have been talking for about 90 minutes, and there is so much more to cover on this topic. And maybe something that we will get back to, and because obviously there's so much more, and obviously we want to hear from anyone out there. If you want to leave a comment on our website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com, we'd love to hear about how you handle these things, or if you want to write us privately, I understand that that might not be something that you want to comment on in a public forum, and then you can email us at firewaterpodcast@comcast.net. And so I do want to wrap this show up, just because again we've been talking for 90 minutes and there's so much more to discuss and we could go on forever, but I do want to wrap up with one thing, Tom, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I just sort of thought of this, and I'll answer my own question first to give you time. Why don't you think of something you've done recently, and it could be big or small, that was a kind of self-therapeutic thing. Just you were feeling anxious, you were feeling stressed, you were feeling something, and you did something, big or small, that helped make you feel better. And I'll go first, because that way you have a chance to think about an answer.
Okay.
And the thing I did was I have a bunch of – I'm usually listening to podcasts on my ride home. But once in a while, if I'm in a mood, I'll put music on. And I have – I don't know. I still have like about 10 CDs in my car, and every so often I'll pull one of them out. They're mostly Dylan CDs, and it's like a Marvin Gaye in there. But the other night, I was feeling anxious, and I felt – had like I had nervous energy for some reason. I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And I put on one of my favorite records, which is Bruce Springsteen's Tunnel of Love. Now, Tunnel of Love is a sad record because it's his heartbreak record.
It is an underrated album.
Yes, yes. But I put it on, and I had the windows up because it's cold, and I was singing out loud, very loudly. I mean, I can't sing at all. I mean, most of people have heard me on the Fire and Water shows. I can't act. I can't sing. But I'm singing at the top of my lungs, and I'm awful, and it doesn't matter. And in a weird way, I was channeling, I was remembering the feelings I had about a relationship and the older relationships I've had. And I was channeling those feelings via those songs again. And it was almost like touching a bruise in a weird sadistic way of dredging up those feelings. But what made me feel better is because it put into stark relief what I'm going through right now. And I am in a much better place mentally and emotionally and romantically than I have ever been in my entire life. And it just being able to, through the songs, remind myself how much better off I am at this age than I was not that long ago. And again, to tie it into something else I love, there's that line at the end of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, where, you know, the whole movie Kirk has spent talking about how he feels old. And then at the end, after he's gone through this horrendous experience where his friend has died and they fought Khan, and McCoy says to Kirk, "How do you feel, Jim?" And he says, "I feel young." And it dawns on me that I, at this age, feel much younger now than I did when I was 5 years younger 5 years ago. And I'm like, wow, that's a remarkable thing. And listening to those songs again and playing them for the 40 billionth time made me feel good about the choices I had made in some regards and the people I've chose to be with. And it made me feel good. Even though I was listening to a sad record, it made me feel better because it reminded me of, wow, you're in a much better place now than you were when you listened to these songs the last time. And isn't that a good thing? So that's kind of what I did for myself.
That's cool. Yeah, I was trying to think of a couple of things. I know, like, the one deliberate thing that I recently celebrated my wedding anniversary. We did so just by going to a local hotel resort for a night down here. And because my wife and I don't buy each other anniversary presents, we will just pool our money and go do something.
All right, go team.
You know, so last year we took the weekend and we went to Quebec City. And we had never been up to Quebec at all. So that was like really, really cool. This year, like, well, let's spend a little less money. We're going to go to this resort and spa, like, called the Boar's Head in Charlottesville. And we were like, you know what, let's go ahead and get a massage. So we got like this couple's massage thing, which was, you know, basically like, you know, somebody kneading at you and putting hot stones on you. So it was a deliberate act of therapy because the both of us were just like, we totally freaking need this because we're like crazy stressed. But that was like planned. But something that's a little more spontaneous does involve music. I'm like you, I listen to podcasts like all the time. When I'm doing dishes, when I'm, you know, if I'm not occupied with something else that actually needs me to think, you know, it's like if I'm like cleaning the house or something, But I will, I have, you know, I have a huge iTunes library because I still have, like, you know, I still have all my CDs. They're just like in those big books. And I burned a lot of them, ripped a lot of them onto iTunes. And I have, my iPod has like, you know, days worth of music. And I also have a Spotify account. And I was listening to, I just remember recently, there's a group out of Newfoundland called Fortunate Ones. They're like a folk pop duo. And I can't remember, I think I discovered them on like YouTube, because my grandmother was from Newfoundland. And I've listened to a group for years named Great Big Sea. They're not together anymore, but they're like very, very traditional, almost like Irish influenced Newfoundland folk song type of stuff. So like, you know, old school drinking songs, you know. But this group, I guess it had popped up in a search, and I found a couple of their songs and downloaded their albums. They came out, and they have this song called Steady As She Goes, which is really about, the message of the song is like, I think the story behind it is like knowing somebody who had lost their like possessions in a fire or something. And the idea though is that like we have each, the two of us have each other, and we're just going to keep going. And I don't know what prompted it, but like the song came up in my rotation, and I am listening to it. And I think I'm going to listen to it, not like in a row, but like over the course of the next couple of days, like maybe a couple of times. And yeah, I was thinking about people that like friends and things like that. And sometimes when I sing along to something in the car, I will admit this, it's a total dorky thing, but I will admit that I am like totally pretending I'm in a band sometimes. Not that I ever think I'm good enough to be in a band, but like, you know, I'm on stage. But at the same time, like, it's like surrounded by my friends for some reason. So there's something that's connecting me to like just wanting that camaraderie or being around these people, many of whom I think of who it's not physically possible to be around them because we are in different parts of the East Coast at this point in time. So, but it is very therapeutic in that way, because it allows, you know, it's kind of like channeling to that, and that message of the song that, like, you know, hey, this is going to be good, we're going to be okay, and everything's going to be all right. And, you know, for all I know, it's just having a very, very stressful time. And instead of listening to something that was very aggressive, you know, so that it wasn't like a very kind of like outlet aggressive, it was just sort of a reassuring thing. And then listening to that, and then continuing on and listening to touchy feely music, I might have listened to some REM or some I have my liked songs. So I have stuff by the Lumineers and The Head and the Heart, and there's this gorgeous song by First Aid Kit called Emmy Lou that is just absolutely phenomenal. So like, you know, some of the songs that I listen to on a regular basis, and it was just kind of, you know, and I'll listen to it at certain times a day because it's very calming, relaxing, and you can kind of channel your emotions to this like white guy with a guitar or with a piano folk music. So yeah, it's kind of in the same way. And there are certain songs on Tunnel of Love that go into that rotation. The title track to that record is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
As is One Step Up, Two Steps Back. Which oh God.
I listen to that whole album as an album. I generally don't mix in my Springsteen songs with that song. I feel like it's of a piece for some reason. That's sort of how I feel about it. So I don't know, Tom. I think we've made a lot of progress with this session.
I think we have.
So I hope everybody listening got something out of this. I don't know if
–
I think Tom and I were sort of not exactly sure what we wanted to necessarily accomplish with this. It was just more like it was on our minds, and it was something that, you know, I just felt like it was a worthy conversation. And this is something that I'm sure we will come back to at some other point, and maybe have like the way Gene and I did a progress report with Geek Fitness, we could do a progress report with the mental fit. Like, okay,
we
made changes, and what's it? Cause I mean, I had a lot of changes here. I got more coming up, and it'll be sort of interesting to come back and do this. So for those of you listening, you know, if you can reach out to somebody, if you need to reach out to somebody, try it, you know, go ahead. And if you are the person that is being reached out to, reciprocate, you know, respond to them, even if it's two sentences. I think it can mean a lot to people. And so, you know, I think it's an important thing. And I'm so very glad that we had this conversation. I mean, of course, the Fine Water podcasts are usually all very goofy because we're talking about goofy stuff or silly stuff. And this was, you know, we're kind of stretching the boundaries a little bit. But I think that's good. That's a good thing. You can do lots of different stuff with podcasts. And so thank you, Tom, for sort of pushing this forward. I'm glad we got a chance to do this.
I am, too. No, thanks for having me on. I really, really do appreciate it.
All right. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find your shows that you mentioned out on the internet?
Yeah, so I have two shows over at the Two True Freaks Network, which is at twotruefreaks.com. One is Pop Culture Affidavit. It is the sworn testimony of a dork and everything random in popular culture, meaning that I will cover whatever I feel like talking about, movies, TV, music, etc. The blog for that is popcultureaffidavit.com. I also have Required Reading with Tom and Stella, where Stella and I, Stella of the Batgirl the Oracle podcast, and I talk about literature. We pick one book every episode, and we kind of just book club it because we're both teachers, so we have that discussion. And you can find me on Twitter at PopAff. That's P-O-P-A-F-F.
All right, very cool. Well, again, thanks, everybody, for listening, and let us know what you thought of this episode over on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. And, of course, again, you can, if you want to join the Geek Fitness page over on Facebook, just go to Fire and Water Geek Fitness, and you can apply to be a – it's a closed group, but you can apply for it, and you'll be approved, obviously. And, like I said, even though it's been mostly talking about physical fitness, we have talked about mental fitness as well. And when this episode comes out, we will mention it on the page, and maybe that will spark a discussion over there. So, again, thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will see you later. Take care of yourselves. And take care of somebody else. Thanks. Bye. Looking at-